You know, if it weren't for these marshmallows, I'd say there's something vaguely biblical about this experience.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 27, The Test. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting. You know, it is biblical, almost, about that.
What?
Is Moses was put into the marsh and set down the river. So you're almost there.
He wasn't all that mellow about it, though.
I mean, he probably was. He was a baby.
There's not a lot in the Old Testament that's mellow, let's be honest. True.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Ready to get your PSA on?
Yep.
Well, first we have to get through our B plot. Allison might not get her job back due to bad blood with Amanda over Billy, who lies his way into a magazine job. It's a lot going on.
Oh, my God.
So Lucy and her bad new haircut, which is still bad, are on the phone when Allison opens the door to her office and peeks in like, hi. And luckily for Allison, Lucy thinks it's cute. Just kidding. Clip two.
What the hell are you doing here?
I'm back.
So I see. For how long?
More or less, permanently.
You left 2 weeks ago, Allison. What happened?
I realized I'd acted hastily and that I'd made a mistake. And I guess I'm here now to beg for my old job back before I go looking for something else.
Oh, Allison. I gave you plenty of time to think about this. In fact, I begged you to reconsider.
I know, and you were right. It was just one of those things. I really thought I knew what I was doing.
So now you think you can waltz right back in here and have your old job back?
No, not at all. I had hoped to have a chance to prove myself again. I have worked hard for this company, Lucy, and I am ready to work even harder. And I am the first to admit that I made a mistake.
I'm sorry, but it's just not going to be that easy.
Is the position still open?
It is.
Can I at least interview?
Yes, but not with me. I've turned hiring over to someone else.
Whatever it takes and whoever I have to impress, I'll do it.
Oh, boy.
Savage cut to Amanda after that, by the way.
So good. Yeah. This is how we know Allison is going to really regret that declaration, because cut straight to Amanda and Allison like slinking up behind her. So you remember when Allison kissed Amanda off by saying she didn't care what Amanda thought of her? Bet she regrets burning that bridge now. So she chirps that she's there to get her old job back, and Amanda thinks she's joking. Allison confirms what we guessed, which is Amanda is the one interviewing, and chirps even harder that she wants to make Amanda's life easier by saving her the trouble of hiring someone and just going ahead and starting today. And instead, Amanda, of course, asks Allison to sit down and starts wrecking her in clip three.
What happened to Keith?
Things didn't work out.
Personally, I never thought it would. So are you back together with Billy?
Back to sharing an apartment.
It's funny, I always thought it was more than that. But now I realize that you're both so scared of a real relationship that the only thing either one of you can commit to sharing with another person is the rent.
Amanda, that's not fair.
In my book, Allison, the only thing fair in this situation is that you're out of a job.
Come on, Amanda. Can't we just put all this behind us? I mean, we used to be friends, remember?
You're right.
They were friends for like 36 hours, as I recall correctly.
Yeah. This, I mean, the whole thing is so bizarre, given that it's rooted in like Amanda's animosity towards Allison over jealousy over fucking Billy.
Fucking Billy.
It's fucking Billy, but yeah. I mean, I almost don't care because Allison is like Eeyoring around and Amanda's not having it. And it's like, you just shouldn't be having it anyway, not because of fucking Billy.
Mm-hmm. But instead of telling Allison to go kick rocks, her compromise is to put her back on the phones. And Allison has so thoroughly fucked her life that she eagerly accepts. And Amanda's shit-eating grin in response to getting Allison to do this is a masterwork you can see in our visual aids. When Allison gets home, Billy is typing in his fucking famous chair, surrounded by a disorganized mass of Allison's stuff when she comes home, as I said, to tell him how it went at D&D. Billy is just as entitled as Allison, since he doesn't get why she wasn't just permitted to resume the job that she flaked on. And Allison is grossed out to have to kiss Amanda's ass to get her old job back, and Billy tells her not to let misguided ethics stop her doing whatever it takes. Meanwhile, Billy has been applying his creative writing skills to his resume. Clip 4.
Master's in journalism, Columbia University. 6 months junior copywriter, D&D advertising.
Yeah, you gotta give the people what they want. Besides, I just got a tip that there's a job opening at a really cool magazine. So I'm gonna do whatever it takes.
You put me down as a reference.
Yeah, but look at the title I gave you. Senior ad exec in charge of West Coast accounts. Pretty spiffy, huh?
My response to this is probably wrong, but it's, why didn't we all lie on our resumes when it was this easy to do it and probably not get caught?
Like, I mean,
truly.
People checked that stuff, though, right?
Well, I mean, we will find out that people do and did, but well, yeah.
Quellec is going to check your shit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, whatever.
So, the next morning, Amanda is hurrying to her desk when Allison, in her remarkably ugly outfit, so glad you flagged it too, it's in the visual aids. Do you want to describe it? This is like the beigey, pinky, rose quartz one.
Oh, okay. I still like the citrine one, worn with a scrunchie, is
yet
the one that's
come.
Stuck in my head.
Uh-huh.
Ugh, they're both terrible. It's mm-hmm. like double-breasted dress time. Mm-hmm. For Allison, but it's all in like these sunshiny sherbety colors, and then she is like, she has the most collegey hair.
Yeah,
it just reminds me of when classmates of mine in university would go to formals and have like a scrunchie, and then they would put a Patagonia over like a strapless dress when they got cold. Like, oh, 90s, you can't do that. Awful.
Yeah. It's also like every shade they choose for her is wrong for a blonde. Like everyone. Mm. It's kind of remarkable. Almost like they're doing it on purpose because they hate her. But anyway.
Well, and she would never pick shades this vibrant. Mm-hmm. She's like, she's a beige person. Put her in some beige.
Yes. She's a beige candle, and the scent of that candle is beige. Anyway, she waylays Amanda to blow all the smoke up in the city up her ass, and this was the early 90s, so that's a lot of smoke. Clip 5.
I just want you to know how fond I've always been of you. I mean, from the first day we started working together, I've always admired and looked up to you as both a friend and a mentor. And I hope things work out because I look forward to learning from you, and I know that together we can continue to make a really great team.
How sweet. And I want you to know that no matter who I ultimately decide to hire for this position, I hope I can continue to be an inspiration to you.
Thank you.
Now, my 9:30 interview should be here any minute. Get him some coffee, have him wait, and I'll be with him as soon as I can.
Oh, that's brisk, baby. You're an inspiration to me, Ms. Woodward.
Honestly, she's a queen. And again,
I mean, fond. Nana, yeah. Really?
Yeah. Again, in my ongoing effort to queer Allison, if this were happening now, this would all culminate in like a scratch and cat fight that devolved into making out and having sex between the two of these. Like, I strongly believe that this is true.
I mean, I'm not seeing the chemistry, but that's just because Allison.
Right.
But like, you're trying to get a job back in advertising and you can't even sell that you admire Amanda.
Yeah.
Who is awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know, girl.
Meanwhile, in what I think is Century City, Billy brings a bouquet of flowers into Escapade magazine, which he tells the receptionist are for managing editor Nancy Donner. The receptionist tells him to leave them, but he has a whole fucking caper planned in clip six.
Oh, I'm sorry. See, this is a singing delivery. I have to deliver them in person.
Okay, she's down the hall, third door on your right.
Well, our deadline is Thursday. If he's not going to deliver the piece, let me know, so I can be sure to never use him again. And I have to go because somebody just delivered me some flowers. I don't know. Okay, keep me posted. These are beautiful. Isn't there a card?
No. Actually, they're from me.
You? And who are you?
My name is Billy Campbell, and here's my resume, along with a few tear sheets of a column I wrote for the now-defunct Melrose Weekly. And I'm here to interview for your editorial assistant position.
And somehow you think this is the best way to get a job here?
Miss Donner, I'm just so tired of being reduced to a faceless resume on some editor's desk, and I would do anything for the opportunity just to meet you in person so I could let you know what a great asset I could be for your magazine if you just give me the chance.
I see. Well, sit down.
Oh, Nancy, no.
Nancy. Ain't no party like a Donner party. Sorry, had to. Just, ugh. I feel like this kind of stunt was something people were trying to pull all the time at that time because it was a recession and yikes. So
sure. Also, Billy is such a rube that it doesn't occur to him that if he's really trying to sell this idea, like when you deliver flowers, they come in a box or they come in a vase. They don't come in plastic from the bodega. Sorry.
Yeah. Or your hand.
Right.
Also, wear a belt.
For real. For this whole episode, I mean, I didn't notice it as much as you did, but when you send all the pictures, it was like, wow, not in one shot is he wearing a belt. Anyway.
No.
They both sit down at Nancy's weirdly low desk while she looks at the pack of lies that is Billy's current resume. She will check out his column and, if she likes it, might check his references. But journalistic ethics, she says, prohibit her from accepting the shitty flowers. So okay. He thanks her for considering him, and she gives him a look like she's impatient for him to turn around so she can consider dad as. So put a pin in that. It's going to come up again, FYI. And when Allison comes home from another day of eating shit at D&D, she at least gets the flowers because Billy got the job at Escapade Magazine thanks to a rave of a reference from Allison, his fake old boss at D&D. He wants to help her celebrate, but she's in no mood in clip 7.
Not after 8 humiliating hours of fetching coffee for every bozo who interviews for my job.
Everything is going to work out.
I warned you not to get involved with Amanda from the very beginning.
Oh, so now it's my fault?
Well, if you'd listened to me, I wouldn't be in this predicament in the first place.
It wasn't my idea to quit your job and move to Seattle. I mean, you made those mistakes on your own.
Thank you. Now I feel wonderful.
Well. You're going to come out and celebrate with me, whether it kills you.
Okay.
The whining. I swear to God.
She's just such a pill. She's such a pill. It's too bad there already is an Allison Pill who is cool because Allison Pill.
Yeah. But I also love how in her mind, like, the reason she doesn't have her job back on asking is because of Billy and Amanda. Like, bitch, you were told do not walk out on this job because it will not wait for you. And you did it anyway. You did this to yourself without either of them. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, and for some reason, Lucy gave you a reference, like maybe try to find something in Seattle since all your shit is already there.
Yeah.
Ugh, whatever.
I mean, it's back now, but seriously.
Well, I know, but whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, fortunately, we don't have to watch Billy and Allison's sad party at presumably Shooters and next pick up the storyline at D&D, where Lucy calls Amanda to say she knows. She said Amanda could hire whoever she wanted to replace Allison, but that is bumming Lucy out to see Allison back on the phones. Clip 8.
As far as I can tell, there's no good reason as to why we shouldn't give her old job back.
Well, really? For one, we don't get along.
Amanda, this is not a sorority. It is an ad agency. Now, I suggest you solve your personal problems and learn to function as a team. Would you send Allison Parker in here, please?
What are you saying, that I have to hire her?
Amanda... Allison is smart. She works hard. She knows this company. Professionally, I can't think of a single reason not to bring her back.
This is
Lucy.
Such bullshit. Starting with, I know it's a soap, but why Amanda says the reason that she doesn't want to hire her is that they don't get along is so dumb. Like, Amanda should say, I don't want to hire Allison because she left us in the lurch with no notice. Like, she left in a completely unprofessional manner and I don't trust her as an employee now. Like, that should be good enough.
And it's not the first time that she got fucking dickmatized by Keith and flaked on a work thing.
Right.
Like, look, we're all 23 at some point, and it's not like I never called in with the Irish flu. You can ask my boss at Barnard, but fuck. No. Yeah. You can't think of a single reason. I just wish that Lucy could stick the landing.
Yeah.
That she'll say these, like, hilarious things. She's like, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, well, really? But then she's like, you know what? Mm-hmm. And then the way she proceeds to sell Amanda out in the like, scene lit immediately following this is such horseshit.
Oh yeah, well, we're gonna get to it. So that's when Allison comes in the hideous lime green coat dress. And Lucy totally undermines Amanda by ignoring her objections and telling Allison that Amanda just told her she's decided whom to hire. And after a long pause, as Amanda realizes what is happening, we hear this clip 9.
Welcome back, Allison. Looks like we're a team again.
Oh, that's wonderful. I can't thank you enough.
No need to thank me. But please, let's get one thing clear. In the past, we let friendship get in the way of our professional relationship. Let's not make that same mistake twice.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Oh, boy. Careful what you wish for, Allison.
I mean, few things. First of all, no chance. Second, if Lucy thinks that forcing these two together is going to get good work out of them, like, I doubt it. This is not how you build a team. Like, this is
no.
This just means now Amanda doesn't trust you either because you sold her out. Mm-hmm. And why Amanda then doesn't just turn around and be like, fine, I quit, is beyond me, because you can't stay at a company where this shit happens, because now she knows they don't have her back. Like,
yeah, true. Although maybe she read ahead in the scripts, but we'll get to that in a couple weeks.
Again, I'm applying real world logic to a soap. I realize this, that I am being ridiculous. So as long as everyone understands that, moving on.
Yeah, no, we're in it together.
Okay.
Get it.
So Billy is having work issues too. Clip 10.
I liked your features, Billy. Unfortunately, you won't be starting here as a writer, though.
Oh, well, what exactly does an editorial assistant do?
Oh my God. You fucker.
Did you really apply for this job not having, I don't know, read the listing? Like, what do you think an editorial assistant does? You assist the editorial team, you dumbass.
I think I paused it at this point to tell the screen it kicks itself in the balls to death, because are you kidding?
Right.
Also, I liked your features, Billy. Mm.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, at Escapade, apparently editorial assistant is a fancy title for fact checker. Why she trusts this goober to check a fact, I don't know. Also, more evidence for my suspicions about how Billy actually got this job. Clip 11.
I didn't tell you this, but the other day the girl buzzed me before you came in with the flowers. She thought you were a male stripper.
No. Really?
Something you said about needing to make a personal delivery. Hey, 2 points for creativity. I don't blame you. These days you need every edge you can get.
If that showed up to strip in my office, I would murder it and the sender. Sorry. Yeah. It's the face.
Anyway, Nancy then introduces Billy to his catty colleague, Cameron, who is played by Patrick Breen. What do you keep calling him?
Quellec.
What is he from?
Galaxy Quest.
Ah, of course.
I mean, he's from a ton of other stuff, but...
Yeah, yeah. Yes, look him up. Patrick Breen, B-R-E-E-N. You've definitely seen him 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Billy's first task is proofing a restaurant column. Nancy wants to know who did get the flowers that Billy took, and Billy lies that he threw them out. Nancy says that's good thinking, because if she can't have them, no one should. Uh-oh, Nancy hot for Billy. And then there are more uh-ohs as Cameron asks where Billy went to school, and Billy has to repeat the fake info on his fake resume. And Cameron asks when he graduated from Columbia. Billy says 90. Oh, Cameron graduated 88. So weird they never met. And Billy says this, clip 12.
Well, yeah, well, it's a big school.
No, actually, it isn't.
He's just so pleasant about it, too, that he's like, actually, that's incorrect. Yep. Liar. So good.
Yes, there's some excellent panic smiles from Andrew Shue, which you can see in the visual aids, but yeah. Cameron decides not to bust Billy today. Meanwhile, at D&D, Amanda returns Allison's work to her and tells her it's shit. I'm paraphrasing. Allison defends it, but Amanda says it's fine when she says it's fine, and Allison better get it straight or she'll be out of a job. Later, Allison picks her way down from the business balcony and asks Amanda to quit being such a bitch to her about Billy, and Amanda throws back a curveball in clip 13.
Now, if you're upset about something, maybe there's some unresolved jealousy over the situation with Billy. Let's just have it out right now.
Allison, what are you talking about? Jealous of whom?
You know what I mean.
Just because Billy and I aren't living together doesn't mean we don't see each other. I was there for him when his father died. Where were you?
I was there for him, too.
You were there too late.
Amanda, Billy hasn't mentioned you once since I've been back from Seattle.
I'm not surprised.
Oh, really? And why is that?
Think about it, Allison.
Okay. I don't get this gambit, first of all, because as we've said 5,000 times, it's Billy and he is not worth fighting this hard for or at all. Yeah. But also, like, does Amanda think that Allison and Billy don't talk? Like, all Allison has to do is say, hey, was Amanda around when your dad dies? And Billy can be like, no. You know, it's weird.
Yeah. Or like, yes, she was lurking around Melrose and acting weird. And
she stalked me.
Yeah. Like, I accepted the casserole from whatever store she bought it at and booted her off. That, like, it's just so bizarre.
Yeah. So then horny Nancy calls Billy in to see how he's doing. His first assignment was good, but the next one's about LA's Hispanic history and may be a bigger challenge, which please don't make us watch Andrew Shue try to speak Spanish.
Oh, God. No.
Did I mention Nancy's horny? Because she is. Clip 14.
One more thing. I want your advice on this. I was working out at my gym last night. I do 5 nights a week without fail. And there was this guy next to me on the Stairmaster who looked exactly like you. As a matter of fact, I thought it was you. But it wasn't. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say hello to him so badly. I guess I was afraid he might not want to go out with me. After watching me sweat for half an hour on the Stairmaster. So I didn't say anything.
Hmm.
I mean, how would you react? As a man, I mean, if you saw a woman like me next to you on the Stairmaster.
I don't know. I guess,
would you be attracted?
Well, sure.
I should have said something. I was too shy.
Oh,
yeah,
Nancy.
You seem shy.
Yeah, this is not going anywhere good. So that's
Nancy.
It's Billy. On to the A plot. Jake might have AIDS. So just finished a sunrise. Fuck. Well,
I mean, yeah.
Jake's phone rings and we're alerted that this is a special episode by a writing credit for the one and only Darren Star. Jake says he doesn't pick up before 8 a.m., but he's alarmed when the answering machine picks up and it's Perry. Remember Perry? She's from the art scam. He does not convince Joe by saying that Perry is nobody, yet also bad news. So finally admits she's an old girlfriend who was doing a ton of coke the last time he saw her. So Joe agrees that Jake should not call her and he gets back into bed. And that night at the bike club, Jake brags that he made mad stacks on a bike that arrived in terrible shape. They're making dinner plans, but then someone's knocking on the door despite Jake yelling that they're closed. Of course, it is Perry, darkly warning that he has to talk to her and shoving past him into the store while Joe watches from the back. Perry is impressed that he owns his own business and rudely asks how he came up with the money. Joe emerges to introduce herself as his business partner, and Perry even more rudely guesses Joe is his sugar mommy, which kind of. Jake asks Perry to say whatever she has to tell him, but she teases that it's strictly private, so Joe excuses herself, and Perry makes Jake wait some more by asking to get out of there. And on their way to, I assume, Shooters, Perry tells Jake she had a bigger drug problem than he knew. Like, did he know she was shooting heroin? She's been in rehab for the past few months, and they have this exchange. Clip 15.
So you're clean.
Clean. Not exactly. It was weird. I got the drugs out of my system, and that felt great. I vowed to start a whole new life, you know? Macrobiotics and exercise, the whole bit. But then I got sick. I got the flu, and that turned into pneumonia, and I called the doctor, and he put me into the hospital, and he said that, he told me that I have AIDS.
Oh my God.
It's probably from sharing needles, you know? I mean, I thought I was careful, but maybe there was a time when...
What does this mean? For me, I mean.
Yow, buddy.
Wow. Like, like, she knows that that's what you're thinking, so you don't actually have to say it.
Yeah.
Although, on the other hand, she is taking so fucking long to get to the point we all know is coming the minute she mentions needles. And it's like, dude.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Let's get to the point.
Still. Instead of calling Jake out for this, Perry kind of smugly says she remembers that she and Jake did have sex post-heroin, and they have this further exchange in clip 16.
Have you ever been tested?
No. I never had any reason to.
Nice privilege. Okay. Gross.
I obviously, we all know the purpose of this episode is to be a teaching moment, but still, Jesus Christ, you were sexually active in a year that had a 98 or 90, 80 in it,
yeah.
You know? That was the reason. Anyway, sometime later, Joe knocks on Jake's door to see what's up, but also she's trying not to be too clingy or nosy about it. And her jokey, but not that jokey guess is that Jake's been surprised by another child. But he lies that Perry just needed money. Joe admits that seeing Jake with Perry made her jealous, which Jake says is silly. And they have this exchange, clip 17.
Why not? She's gorgeous.
So are you.
Oh, a little higher register, buddy. Make it real credible.
Oh,
so are
my
you.
God. Okay. Jesus.
So he wants to go to bed. She thinks it's a proposition, but he meant alone. And at the door, she earnestly asks if everything's all right, and he lies that it is. And then Perry meets Jake the next day at the medium nice cafe set with the plastic covered patio, where he asks her what kind of scam she's running now, because, you know, last time, art scam. Perry says there's no scam, and when he smugly says they haven't fucked in over a year, she says she doesn't know how long she's been HIV positive. And he tries to slut shame her by saying he never did anything wrong, but she turns it back on him. Since she assumed he had unprotected sex at some point before they met, it's possible he gave her HIV, which is true. It is possible.
Yep.
And she says she's done her duty by telling him he's at risk, which, of course, he always was and still is. So the next step is his. Clip 18.
Now it's up to you to get tested. And to be safe, I bring your girlfriend with you.
Leave her out of this.
No, Jake, I won't. And for her sake, you better not either. Now, if you'll excuse me, I don't think there's anything further we have to say to each other.
It's a shame they couldn't get a better actor to play this part, but still, she's right, of course, everything yeah. she says. Mm-hmm. So Jake is moping in Shooters, where else, when Matt joins him to get drafted into being Jake's HIV educator in clip 19.
God.
I'm going to ask you something. If you think it's too personal, I want you to just forget I mentioned it. Shoot. Have you ever gone and had an AIDS test?
Yes. Definitely yes.
Why? I mean, if you got this time bomb taking away inside of you, just waiting to blow up, what good's it gonna do you to know?
Jake, don't be stupid.
Nothing's ever scared me. I mean, really scared me. Until I started thinking about this.
Jake, what's going on?
I'm just curious, I guess.
So I asked the gay guy. Okay. Uh-huh. Just go get the fucking test.
Jesus. Honestly. So Matt, of course, is A, a social worker, B, a gay man, and C, not an idiot. So he sees through this and volunteers his own story of having had a former partner get diagnosed and being too scared and in denial to even call that guy when he was sick. But he realized you can't let fear run your life. Clip 20.
So finally, I went down, I took the test, ready to live with any result.
Are you okay?
What I realized was that either way, I'd be okay. Look, testing positive isn't a death sentence. Ignorance is.
I have to say, I weirdly appreciate that the show does not make Matt disclose his own status for the sake of Jake's story, which is probably just accidental, but still, like, good job.
Yeah. And also, Doug Savant really, he just is eating various shit sandwiches for the entire run of the series.
Yeah.
He really bails some of this out. Like,
yep.
There's definitely, you know, some sincere pain there. And I think that the show is like trying. It's just like, I don't know. This is a soap opera for adults, ostensibly. Mm-hmm. And it's just hard, like, you know, 30 years on, not to feel like this is very ponderous.
Yeah.
I don't remember how it played back in the day, but it's kind of tough. Also, we've watched TV before. They're not mm-hmm. giving Jake HIV. Sorry.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's also funny to think that, I mean, funny slash sad slash pathetic, that this is what passed for representation or visibility for the gay community at the time. Like, oh, God. I mean, Matt was like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So Joe shows up just then for her fabulous night on the town. And as she and Jake head out, Jake gravely thanks Matt for the talk, which smooth. So Joe and Jake go for a drive. And when they stop, she's finally like, what the fuck is going on? And he starts by saying they have to have a talk. She's also not an idiot and has figured out it's something that has to do with him and Perry. So he blurts that Perry has AIDS. And Joe's first question is the obvious one. Clip 21.
Jake, did you and Perry have sex without using anything?
Yeah, we probably did.
Oh, Jake.
The truth is, I never thought about AIDS. I knew it was out there, but I never thought it could be part of my life.
Yeah, well, neither did I. I guess it's one of the fringe benefits of being married.
Joe, do you remember the first time we had sex? We had a little bit too much to drink at the restaurant, and we couldn't keep our hands off each other all through dinner. We just stumbled back to your apartment and went for it.
And I thought about asking you to use a condom, but I figured, what the hell? I'm on the pill. I didn't want to spoil the mood.
Yeah, and I had one. But I thought, what the hell? She's been married. And there's no possible way that I could give anything to her.
So smooth. The lessons we're all learning.
Yeah. I mean, this is what I mean. Like, I give them credit for trying to educate, but mm-hmm. we're just so far past this now that it takes a while.
It does. So
for them to get all the pamphlet phrases out in an order.
Mm. So Jake says if he gave Joe AIDS, he'll never be able to forgive himself with him, which I'm sure will be a huge comfort if it turns out that he did. But she kindly says that they'll get through it together. So the next day they go to a clinic where they're separately counseled about the test. They'll apparently get their results in 24 hours, which seems very fast for the era, but I wouldn't know. But they agree not to talk about it until after they get their results. She also proposes they not think about it, which probably harder to police. And he tries to distract himself with work, but is plagued by soft focus memories of fucking first Perry and then Joe. And Joe shows up to see how Jake is doing. And he admits that he can't stop thinking about his possible diagnosis and decides to give up on work. And they drive out to the desert, which they prove by showing us a lizard in a very arty close up shot. Come on.
But then they're on the grass. Like, oh, you know, that one grassy mead in the desert. Sure. Joshua Meadow. Fucking show.
So he talks about the spirituality and the vastness and other such LA bullshit. She's been thinking about the years she wasted being miserable instead of appreciating being alive. Somewhere in the back of her mind, she never thought she'd live past 30, since that's how old her mother was when she died. Joe thought she would inevitably die the same way, but her mother had bipolar, which as far as we know, Joe does not. Although, this reminded me, we did see her throw those pills away when she first came on the show, and we never found out what they were for or if she ever started taking them again. So, question mark? I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they were Prozac.
Oh, okay. All right.
But I don't care enough to check
right
our work on that. So.
I mean, I'm sure it'll come up again if it's a plot point, but
yeah.
Unlike her mother, Joe doesn't want her life to end, and if she has HIV, she'll fight it with everything she's got. Jake says everything might be fine. And also, there's something he's wanted to tell her for a while, but he's been too afraid. And it is that he loves her. And at first, she says thank you, which is always funny. But then she says it back and they kiss. And the Joe and Jake love theme plays. And then Jake is back at the clinic learning he has tested positive. Just kidding. It's a nightmare. And he wakes up and is excited to take her out for her first. I didn't clip this, but I should have, because he says they both say chilaquiles wrong like 500 different ways. Anyway,
I know. Chilaquiles. I was like, what even are those? Oh, gotcha.
And then it's Jake's real clinic appointment, and surprise, Jake is not, as Sarah predicted, in fact, HIV positive. But the doctor tells him he needs to start using condoms, stopping just short of calling him an idiot, and that he'll need to get tested again in 6 months and probably forever afterwards if he thinks he may have been exposed to the virus. And in the waiting room, he and Joe tell each other they're okay, and they hug, which is kind of rude to do in front of whatever percentage of people are there to find out they are HIV positive, which, like, just guys, go outside and celebrate, maybe.
Yeah, really.
But Jake is sorry he put Joe through this, but she's glad they got tested, which they should have done from the beginning. True. She wants to celebrate, but he has to go somewhere else first, which is to see Perry and tell her his status in it, you know, just to inform her not to gloat. Which is what she thinks he's there to do, but he says he wants to help her. She doesn't need his pity. He apologizes for being shitty, but she doesn't blame him. She wishes she had had someone to take her anger out on. And to his question, she says she generally feels okay. Clip 22.
Is there anything I can do for you?
Well, you could loan me $10,000 for the medical bills. Other than that, I
$10,000 is such a cute medical bill.
That's it, really. For a chronic pre-existing condition, that's adorable.
Sigh. Before he leaves, Jake says this process has made him realize that he's wasted energy being bitter, and that while he and Perry were a shitty couple, they should try to be friends. She agrees. I'm pretty sure we will not see her again, but maybe I'm wrong.
I checked. We don't.
Great. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP.
Cameron.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a big school. No, it isn't.
Best. Yeah. 100% Cameron. You are so right. Least valuable player. Lucy.
Seriously.
Bad.
Change
manager.
The locks. At D&D.
Yeah. That's bullshit.
Next time on Again With This, Billy is sexually harassed. Amanda continues avenging herself on Allison over Billy. Michael and Kimberly fight temptation, but not that hard. And I have a sudden and inexplicable urge to purchase a Minute Maid product of some sort. You should purchase an antacid product of some sort before, quote, enjoying our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. They're on our website at againwiththispodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and you can support our Patreon at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra episodes. I'm Lethal Ignorance Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Master of Journalism, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Deceptively Big School, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.